AM 950 WROL Boston, the spirit of Boston, a service of Salem Communications. It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. Remember, you can always tune in and hear us on your favorite app, like TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio, or just go right to our website, WROLradio.com. And you can always find older programs on iTunes. Just go to Car Doctor Radio, or you can go to Podomatic, and you can find us there as well. Just look under the automotive section. And with your help, we try to be at the top listing there. So keep listening and keep downloading, I guess, is the best thing to do. Have you ever noticed you go to the gas pump and there's regular, mid-range, premium? Maybe once in a while you see a diesel pump. In probably two or three locations in Massachusetts, you might see E15 gasoline. But there's not a lot of choices. And if you look way back in history, back in the turn of the last century, you could buy a car that was electric, might have been diesel. It might have run on peanut oil. It could have run on wood chips, for that matter. Well, how come we're just stuck on gasoline? And with us on the phone is John Brackett. He is an engineer and with a group called freedomfuel.org. John, good morning and welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Good morning. Thanks for having me in Beantown.
Well, certainly. Well, gasoline, it's here, it's everywhere, but how come it's the only choice?
That's the whole point with the monopoly is, unfortunately, they take the choice away from us. First, it started with Prohibition, completely took ethanol away as a choice. Every single time we have an oil spike, it's followed by a recession, interest in flex fuel vehicles. I mean, we have had this technology for 30 years, yet we're still stuck with that one choice, and it's time to try to take that choice back.
Well, I remember, and this probably had to be 25 years ago, I was talking to some folks from Marathon Oil, and I was at an event, and they said on Monday morning they were going to announce that they were going to put CNG pumps in all of their gas stations, and then it never happened. And about a month and a half later, I ran into the same engineer, and I said to him, "What happened?" And he said, "How much did you pay for gas this morning?" I said, "I don't know, 99 cents a gallon." And he said, "That's what happened."
Well, those days are long over. If you look at how many cars are coming up in China and India, the demand is just too great. We have to have other resources.
Yeah, and I was saying that wasn't it the original diesel cars? Wasn't the intent that farmers could grow their own crops to actually power up their own vehicles at one point?
That's actually true for the Model Ts, which were gasoline, and the diesels. The first diesels actually ran off of coal dust and then peanut oil. There wasn't even a, quote, diesel fuel then.
Well, I know somebody I know, his son was going to college up in Maine, and he bought a Volkswagen Jetta that was converted to run on French fry oil, and he was like a rock star in his town because the local pizza place had to pay to get rid of their fry oil, and him and his friends, they had two or three of these cars. They would go in, take all the fry oil they wanted, they'd get free pizza or soda.
It's a great way to make use of waste resources right now, and you can do the very same thing with various biomasses, cellulosic materials left over from harvesting. There's a ton of options out there, but they're just not legal to be used on the road yet. Yet we know how to make them into fuel.
Is part of the reason the whole gas tax thing where if you have, years ago I had an electric car, you know, I was plugging in at home, charging it up, but I guess technically I wasn't doing my part to pay the road tax. Is that part of the problem?
Honestly, not my area of expertise. Looking at the tax incentives and tax solutions, there are a dozen different ways to go with that.
So what are some of the alternatives? We've heard about, you know, alcohol-based fuels like E85 and E15. I'm old enough. I remember in the 70s there was something called gasohol, which kind of came up when there was some gas shortages. What are some of the alternatives? What can people look at, and how can they get manufacturers to maybe stop getting oil the way we normally get it.
My favorite example of another option is methanol. It is the literally the cheapest liquid fuel we can make from natural gas or coal, and it's very compatible with mixing with ethanol or gasoline.
And it's one of those ones that right now we're using ethanol. Why hasn't methanol really caught on?
Methanol was actually the original flex fuel vehicle of the last 30 years. If you look at the last oil embargo, the very first flex fuel cars, and it was mostly a California-based program, but they ran off of a blend of 85% methanol with 15% gasoline. And that continued for a solid 15 years. It wasn't until about 94 that ethanol started coming in.
And ethanol, you know, people talk about ethanol and corn. And I was on vacation a couple of years ago in Mexico, and there was a corn convention at the hotel I was at. And I speak about 7 words of Spanish. And I was talking to one of the farmers who was there from Mexico, and I was trying to read the pop-up that was in the hotel lobby, and it talked about all of the things that they would use corn for. And I asked him about fuel, and he said here in Mexico, corn is such a big food crop that they would never consider using corn to make fuel. But that was sort of unique to Mexico, but not so much to the United States, right?
Actually, we do use it for food.
Yep.
If you look at the way ethanol is processed, they have to ferment out the starches, and then you're left with a ton of byproduct. Guess what gets to eat that? All those little cows and burgers that you have.
Mm.
So it still gets used for food nowadays. Additionally, there's a dozen different sources you can do. Sorghum, agave, buffalo gourds. There are so many other sources of ethanol, and it should be a local solution, whatever grows best in your area.
Mm. So things like, you know, and I guess I get a little frustrated. I go by, you know, an occasional landfill or something. I see them burning off gas off the landfill, and I keep thinking, can't that be used to power something?
My favorite way to use something like biogas, it's about 40% CO2 and the rest is methane, is to actually convert it into methanol. It's a very simple process. So rather than having to put a bunch of energy into compressing it, you actually have a liquid fuel that you could put in the same tank. That's my biggest problem with CNG. It takes effort to actually make the energy density close to a liquid, and it still doesn't get there.
Mm. Well, I go by, you know, when I go by these landfills and all I see them doing is, you know, burning this pretty blue flame into the sky, it's like, I kind of think, well, that doesn't look like a good use of that.
I know this isn't necessarily a problem in New England, but when you drive further out west, like North Dakota, even Colorado, where I'm at right now, you see flares that light up the entire sky because they're wasting about 50% of the energy coming out of that oil well because it is too cheap to have propane natural gas right now.
That's interesting. So you're starring at some point in a movie. Tell us about that.
I was just having a regular old work day, and somebody showed up, said, "Hey, we'd like to talk to you for a couple of days, see what you do." Told them all about my research, and basically I've taken General Motors vehicles that were not flexible fuel, and when I started looking at the actual computer program within the software, I found that they are flex fuel. It's literally a switch turned off in the car's computer. And that's true for cars from the last 10 to 15 years.
So it's just, so you could go in, do some programming, and turn these cars into flex fuel vehicles?
Using products available to every consumer in America right now.
Why isn't that happening?
Unfortunately, it's because of our EPA and the car companies right now. They have had this ability for 30 years, and yet they keep taking the choice away from us. And what we're trying to advocate is we deserve a choice at the pump. If you look at Brazil, within 8 years, they went completely foreign energy independent by implementing a flex fuel standard. All you need to do is allow the fuels to compete. It drops the price of absolutely everything. I'm not saying you have to use ethanol or methanol, but if other people had that choice too, your gasoline would be cheaper.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense. And you know, as you know, somebody, I commute about 100 miles round trip back and forth to work, and I would like to do it as cheaply as possible. And I'm a car guy, but I'm kind of a weird car guy because just this past couple of days, I drove everything from a electric BMW to a 700 horsepower Dodge Challenger and loved both of them. So, you know, you can put me in something that's an electric vehicle. You can put me in something that's an alternative fuel vehicle, a CNG Honda Civic to a flex fuel vehicle. And as long as the car performs well and does its job, I like the car. So the idea of having this variety of fuels to be able to actually drive innovation, I think, is a pretty amazing thing.
Exactly. It will open up the American market to innovation again, rather than being stuck with the same choices at the pump.
So I'm going to go back to what I said to somebody a couple weeks ago, that sometimes lawyers put the no in innovation. You think that's part of it?
Well said. Unfortunately, what I do right now, I don't deal with the lawyers. I deal with the choice.
And
I believe that we need to enable that choice, so I do it. I don't care if they say it's illegal or not, because this is what we should be doing.
And you say you do it. What do you do when you have a vehicle, your own personal vehicle? What have you done to it to give yourself the choice so you're not going and buying 87 octane regular gasoline at the pump?
Mostly it's been software solutions. I literally hook up my computer. It really depends what brand you have. But there are dozens of different solutions out there. I didn't invent anything. These are all consumer-available products right now.
So this is, I mean, to simplify it a little bit, this is literally like taking the cover off of a computer and going in and turning a switch, but you're doing it electronically through the car, which today's cars, we've been saying for years and years and years, are as much rolling computers as they are mechanical and hydraulic parts. So we need to think of these cars as electronic platforms as much as mechanical, right?
Most certainly. You have to think of them as a software updatable device. You can update your smartphone. You can update your computer, Mac, PC. You have choices, and you can change them. Yet, you're not allowed to do car alterations in this country right now.
Is part of it because of the fear that you're going to change emissions levels?
Every single test I've ever run, whether I did a good job or a bad job with the software update, was cleaner than gasoline. Every single time. They always burn cleaner. It's just a simpler molecule.
Well, it sounds like there should be more choices to me out there. It sounds like, and again, I'm a big internal combustion guy, and if it's, but also if you do this sort of innovation, it also opens up, I think it actually brings in more, okay, let's take an electric vehicle, well, the range is, we're stuck at this, with the exception of Tesla, I suppose, we're stuck at this sort of 100-mile maximum range, but if we put a small internal combustion engine that maybe runs on methanol, all of a sudden now we have this range extendable electric vehicle that can provide a mixture of things for a lot of people.
Chevy Volt's actually an excellent example of a plug-in hybrid that we do the range extension with. I am personally trying to get one converted to methanol. That being said, for the last 3 years, GM said it was going to be a flexible fuel vehicle, and they still have not released it as so. Yet I have found in its software the ability to run on flex fuels.
Well, I think you've sort of opened up my eyes of things. And again, you look at, aren't there, currently Formula One race cars that are running on methanol?
They have been running on methanol since the 70s. It's one of the safest and most powerful fuels you can use right now. Every single car I've tested makes about 5% more horsepower with ethanol or methanol. And if you have a turbocharged car, even more so.
Now, there's always been some concern about methanol and corrosion, but that was just more in older cars, right?
Every car since 2001 and beyond has had ethanol-compliant components put in. The car manufacturers have the ability to put the right components in for methanol or ethanol. Mm. They have this technology. They've had it for 30 years. They just keep choosing no.
So they put it in, they choose no, but I guess this is where my conspiracy theory hat comes on. How come? What are they being forced by big oil? Is it forced by government? Is it, or, you know, I'm not a political guy, so I'm not the right person to ask. I may be a little bit of a conspiracy theorist sometimes, but why don't they just say, okay, here's the choices? And I know it's a little bit, Tesla, I guess, is a good example. They're building an electric car and a charging system infrastructure at the same time. But what's the stumbling block? What's keeping them from doing it? Who's the guy in the mask that's keeping it from happening?
Right now, who wins if the status quo is maintained? It's not us. It's the oil companies. They are the ones writing the rules right now. If you look at the ownership of most car companies, it's actually a pretty disturbing picture of who owns them. For example, Audi, VW, 25% owned by the country of Qatar, an investment group from them. GM is 5% owned by a Saudi prince. And the story goes on and on. Excellent book I'd like to recommend to everybody, Energy Victory by Dr. Robert Zubrin. Does a phenomenal job talking about how this could change all of us. That being said, also like to plug the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you go to pumpthemovie.com, look where it's playing near you. It will be on Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, but that's probably another 4 to 6 months away. It will open your eyes to the possibilities and the history behind it.
And it was, I think it premiered this week in L.A. and New York?
Certainly did. And I've answered Q&As for many of the screenings so far. Everybody's reaction is very positive. I've been very happy to hear how people's eyes are opening to this, that this actually stands a chance of changing things.
And the movie was narrated by somebody famous, right?
Jason Bateman. Everybody recognized him probably from Arrested Development, plus several other shows.
Well, apparently that did really well here because my producer today just got all excited with Jason Bateman's name. So she's already set to go see the movie now. So.
Fantastic. Good to hear.
So the movie's called Pump. The organization's freedomfuel.org. And I just pulled up the website, and cheaper, cleaner, American made. High oil prices are not good for the environment. We look at oil prices and we look at gasoline prices, and we're seeing consistently oil at $100 a barrel. And gasoline prices, even though they've come down just a little bit, the reasons they've come down are probably not in line with these $100 per gallon per barrel fuel prices for oil. But have some choices. It makes sense.
It's actually fuelfreedom.org.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fuel Freedom.
But the idea is literally the same. We need that choice. We need the ability to be able to fight the price because the price is not going down. China in 2000 was selling 1 million cars.
Yep.
Last year, it was between 20 and 40 million. And we only have 270 million cars on the road today in the U.S. There are too many other countries that are going to be competing for the exact same resources that we are shipping from their side of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even if you look at, it was a few years ago that Tata Motors with their, $3,000 car they were selling in India, and they, couldn't stamp them out fast enough. So, and you think about the amount of, you're right, around the world, whether it's China, India, or other countries, the amount of cars that are going on the road and the amount of oil and gas consumption is never been higher. And even though our fuel economy numbers are going up, at some point you have to look at some alternatives. And it's fuelfreedom.org is the website. Pump is the movie, and the premieres now. And like you said, it will be on Netflix before too long. And I noticed on the website, on fuelfreedom.org, there is a lot of information about not just some things about news and other things, but also kind of this Q&A column, which I think if people look at it, it'll be pretty eye-opening.
Yep, that's all we want to do is open America's eyes again. They need to realize that they've been blinded and they've been robbed for the last 30 years. We're the number one producer of oil in the world right now, and we're still paying $4 per gallon in most area. That does not make any sense, but the price is not set by us or competition like everything else in our economy. It's set by an oil monopoly.
So I guess you said it's not set by competition, and I guess it's as simple as not far from me. A reporter called me just yesterday and said, do you have any comment on, there's a couple of gas stations, a couple towns away from here that are selling gas for $3.01 a gallon. And do you have any reason why that is? And I said, well, here in the Boston area, gas is averaging about $3.35 a gallon. Why is $3.01? Apparently, it's competition. It's just a gas war. And they're competing with each other probably to slowly drive themselves out of business at this point. But looking at this, if you have alternatives, if you can sell something other than gasoline, if you can sell gasoline, methanol, ethanol, CNG, and propane, Why not have it available, right?
Agreed. Right now, methanol is only $1.20 per gallon, and that's mass production right now. Do you remember driving off $1 per gallon gasoline? Those days are completely gone.
Yeah, I remember when, actually, I think it was just in the 80s, gasoline dropped way down again. And I was doing a TV interview with somebody. I said, right now, a gallon of gasoline is cheaper than a gallon of water. And And you're right. Those days are completely gone. So where's the answer, I guess? So the movie is called Pump. The website is fuelfreedom.org. Just a lot of eye-opening information. You know, agree, disagree, but look at it. I think it makes sense. Look at it and see what else is out there.
Yep, agree. Much appreciate your time today, John.
All right. Thank you, John. Take care.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. That was John Brackett, one of the engineers that was in the movie called Pump. It just opened up in New York and L.A. The website to find out more information is called fuelfreedom.org. Again, I'm not a political person, but I believe in competition. I believe in innovation. And, you know, a lot of people look at alcohol and alternative fuels. And I know some people are like, you know, electric cars, get off the electric car bandwagon. I drove a BMW i3 this week. Little small BMW, probably the size of a bigger than a Volkswagen Beetle, maybe, kind of squarish. It had phenomenal performance. It would go about 85 miles between charges. Nicely set up interior, easily accommodate four people. Folding rear seat if you wanted to carry some stuff around. But the performance was remarkable. And I was up in the hills of New York, and there was some pretty steep hills. Had no problem at all. The thing was out for rides all day, no problem. It was just a pretty phenomenal car. I drove a BMW i8, which was a high-performance sports car. Think McLaren-ish kind of thing, maybe not quite Ferrari. Powered by a three-cylinder engine that could do 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, had 180-mile-an-hour top speed. $140,000, but again, a very expensive performance car with a three-cylinder engine, but using some different technology. And they were saying one of the things they were looking at when they were developing this car was they were developing it for alternative fuels. So there's some pretty good stuff out there. So, you know, it's certainly worth taking a look at and seeing what it's all about. Right now, we need to think about taking a break. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. If you would like to call us, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Phone lines are completely open. Give us a call. Talk to Kelly. Say hello. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Paul Sullivan. What a great time of the year to enjoy all that New England has to offer. But soon that winter weather will be here, and we all need to make sure we're riding on Goodyear tires. Right now, we have great deals on all of our tires in stock, including up to 15% off our entire line of Goodyear, Dunlop, Bridgestone, and Michelin tires, as well as buy three, get one free on our Sullivan Tire Value line. Plus, save even more with our manufacturer rebates. Nobody can match our people, and we will absolutely not be beat on price. Come in today and let us show you. Thank you.
Right now at Sullivan Tire, great deals on all tires in stock, including 15% off our entire line of quality Goodyear, Michelin, and Dunlop tires. Sullivan Tire, with 66 locations throughout New England, provides free local shuttle service, a 30-day ride guarantee, free tire rotations with tire purchase, state-of-the-art equipment, easy online appointments, and so much more. See SullivanTire.com. Peace of mind driving. You deserve it. We provide it.
Fast and reliable. That's City of Boston Credit Union. Hi, I'm Dan Pye. I'm proud to play on Boston Ice and use traditional Boston services like City of Boston Credit Union. As a member of the City of Boston Credit Union family, I can tell you they have been loyal to their members in Boston for almost 100 years. This September, City of Boston Credit Union will continue their century-long tradition of giving back as they honor the city's first responders. With products and services for all your financial needs, if you're in the market for a new or used car, you need to check out City of Boston Credit Union. With some of the most competitive deals around, they can help you get into the car of your dreams. With a variety of home mortgages, home improvement loans, and new government programs, they have the options you need. Check them out at cityofbostoncu.com or call 617-635-4545. Join me and become a member today. Membership open to anyone who lives or works in Suffolk or Norfolk County.
Hi,
listening to The Car Doctor.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL, The Spirit of Boston. I want to thank John Brackett, our guest, calling from Colorado. A little early in Colorado, I think, so when he called. But let's talk to Maria. Hello, Maria.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Okay. I hope you can help me. I'm sure you can. I have a little situation with a car. It's 98 Chevy.
Okay.
Having a situation with it runs very hot, close to the overheating mark.
All right.
What happens is I had it checked. They did a diagnostic test on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought maybe computer, but I guess that wasn't it. So it's they ran it and thought maybe they pulled the plug so the needle would go down with the temperature gauge to see if the fan is not picking up to cool it. The fan isn't turning over.
Okay.
So ran it. It still wasn't working. So they had other things to do. So the car's been in the shop for over a week or so.
Oh.
And they've been working. It's a really, really crazy situation. They can't pinpoint it. Now they're wondering if maybe the water pump maybe the water pump is it's not sending any signals to to the fan.
What model Chevy is it?
It's a Chevy Lumina.
The Chevy Lumina?
Yeah.
I mean it's not a very complicated, although they're all complicated these days as far as makes things and what makes it makes it work. But there is a there's a couple of different things with the cooling fan. Like you said, the fan isn't turning on.
Yeah, it won't turn over to cool it down.
Yeah, there's two different switches. There's actually a coolant temperature switch for the computer, and there's also a coolant temperature switch for the fan. And it's important that they check both of them to make sure that they're both working the way they should, because if they don't, there's no signal to actually turn the fan on the way it's supposed to. So that's why it's part of the reason is you have to look at that and find out, why that isn't working. The water pump's pretty simple. It just circulates the water inside the engine. So as long as the water's circulating and traveling through the radiator, the engine's going to be cooled off. So I guess what I would want to look at is, what's going on with this radiator cooling fan motor? Why isn't it doing its job the way it's supposed to? Why isn't it turning on? And why isn't it working the way it should? And again, the coolant temperature switch turns on the fan motors, and the switch changes the voltage to, there's also a cooling fan relay, so another switch that gets turned on, just like a light switch on your house.
Yeah.
So they need to follow the kind of progression from the engine temperature switch. They need to look at the switch, the temperature switch for the computer, but also they need to look for the temperature switch that tells what the temperature is of the engine. It goes to the fan relay. The fan relay turns on the power to the fan to make it all work. So they need to look at all of those different things.
Yeah.
And what happens is there's a the other part of it is there's also a separate switch when you turn the air conditioning on. But all of this is designed to work through the engine, through the car's computer. So it's not just the computer's all part of it at the same time. So they need to stay there, and they need to look at these different pieces to find out exactly what it is. So they need to look at each individual part, and then they need to plug their scanner in and be able to try to turn the fan on and off and do what it's supposed to do. So it's not ridiculously complicated, but it's not as simple as just a light switch that turns on and off. So it's a little bit more than that, but they need to actually kind of sit down and identify the different switches. Looking at something like a water pump would probably not be the first place I'd look. In fact, as long as I saw that water was circulating in the radiator, I probably would disregard the water pump completely. Has the car ever actually overheated on you?
No, it never did. It got like maybe an inch from the red mark.
Yeah. And when it gets really hot like that, do you just shut it off, or what do you do?
Yeah, I just I just slow down, and I just slow down. After you drive, and if you're in hot weather in traffic, which it never did before, then it's more so. But then when you're just going right along, it'll start to come down a little bit.
Yeah. Now, and you're sure the fan doesn't come on?
Yeah, because he had it tested there, and he ran it for about over 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I sat in the car while he was running, and he was looking at it, and the needle was still up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fan, he says, the fan's not circulating.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't overheated on you, though.
I know.
Yeah, you're...
I know, I'm wondering...
Yeah, because I'm wondering if the fan is just coming on really, really late. So I would want to look at... My thoughts are I would want to look at that engine temperature sensor, the one that controls the fan, because I'm thinking that for you to be driving in, like, city traffic without a fan coming on, that would overheat. So.
Yeah.
I think it may just be coming on really, really late, and maybe even sitting in the car for 5 minutes wasn't even enough to get it hot enough for the fan to come on.
Yeah.
So I would want to look at that engine temperature switch first. The problem is there's several on there, so they have to make sure they get the right one.
Okay, so they have to look at the cooling one?
Yeah, they have to look at the one that's actually designated for the fan, and it's pretty simple. They can just take it off, and they can actually just... they can actually just test it and make the fan come on and off without the sensor being involved. So,
I kind of lost you a bit.
Yeah, well, there's a sensor in there, and they just need to look at it and test it and see what it is. I think that's the answer, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Then.
Good luck,
thank
Maria.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Yep.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Yeah, and Maria, if you don't get anywhere with this, maybe consider a different garage or that somebody else that can look at it. Maybe this garage just doesn't have the right tools, and I'm not sure where you lived, but if you're looking for a good garage, go to AAA's website, or have somebody go to AAA's website and look for a good garage near you. And the good thing is they warranty all their work, 12 months, 12,000 miles. They'll give you an idea of what's wrong with it. They should be able to diagnose this problem, I would think, within an hour or so and try to figure out what it is. The idea that your car has been in a garage for a week, that's telling me something's wrong. Coming up at the end of October, October 24th, 5th, and 6th, last year... we did the AAA Travel Show at Gillette Stadium in the spring. And this year, they're doing an early travel show in October, but they're doing it Twin River in Lincoln, Rhode Island, the casino place. And I have some tickets to give away. So if you want tickets to the AAA Travel Show, there's going to be a Twin River. They call it the Twin River Event Center. I've never been to Twin River, so I don't know anything about it. But I know it's a casino. It used to be a dog track. It's all been remodeled. Well, I couldn't say that. I was there once, and it was a dog track, and it was pretty disgusting. But it's all been remodeled now. It all looks really nice, and it's free parking. And if you would like tickets to the AAA Travel Show, all you got to do is call up and ask and talk to Kelly. And Kelly will get your name and address, and you get two tickets. And we'll come to you. So call 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. And Kelly will give you tickets, or she'll take down your name and address, and we will give you tickets to the AAA Travel Show. So it's that easy. Our buddy Rick spent however much it costs for a stamp and mailed us. He needs to get postcards. I think he can mail postcards cheaper. Or he needs to get email, which is free. And he says, Car Doctor, lately, it seems that more cars early in the morning, but after sunup or late in the afternoon, but before sundown, are driving with their brights high beam lights on. How come or why? I'm not sure. I don't know why. I mean, I can understand if you're on the road and you're and it's dark and it turns, but maybe they're, I can understand in the morning if you're like I left the house. I was in New York Wednesday and Thursday. So I left the house when it was dark. I suppose if I had my high beams on and I never turned them down by the time the sun came out, I don't know why. We try to tell people that certainly driving with their headlights on makes their car more visible. But driving with their high beams on, I think they're just being annoying at that point. If you're calling in to get tickets for the AAA Travel Show, be patient. Kelly's writing as fast as she can. And we're going to be trying to broadcast live from the AAA Travel Show. On whatever that would be, October 25th, if the radio gods are with me. And I have I have everything but, you know, the ability to send smoke signals. So I have a piece of remote equipment that goes over the internet, piece of remote equipment that goes over a phone line, a piece of remote equipment that I guess goes over a cell phone. So one way or another, we should be able to broadcast out of there. We'll see how well it works. So, Rick, as far as why people are driving with their brights on, maybe they're just lazy. Maybe it's just from leftover from the night before. I'm not really sure, but I don't know. So, something to talk about. And remember, the Boston Cup is coming up this weekend, I believe. And the Boston Cup is this pretty phenomenal-sounding car show that's going to be taking place right at Boston Common. And just sounds like it's got 100 fascinating cars you've never seen before. The other thing, too, is the car show and men's health show that's taking place at Newton Wellesley Hospital, which is worth taking a look at. If you're somebody who, like me, doesn't take care of their health particularly well, you can go to the Newton Wellesley Hospital, find out about what they have going on, and you can check all that out. Well, I was up in Monticello, New York this week, and Monticello, New York is sort of up in the old Catskills area. There's not much up in the Catskills anymore. In fact, I don't really know how people make a living up there. I saw a few little stores. There's a Kohl's distribution center, and they were building a new Dollar General store. But that's about all that was up there at the time. So not a whole lot going on. And I looked at it and I said, well, I don't know if this is a place where I build a racetrack, but it's a private racetrack. We got to get them on the phone sometime to talk about what it is, just because it's so outrageously expensive. But it's this private 4.1-mile racetrack. They also built a go-kart track up there, too. And it's like joining a country club, a very exclusive country club, because the last I knew, and I don't know this to be the case, but when it first opened, it was a $150,000 initiation fee, and it was $30,000 a year. So $30,000 a year to be a member. And what that does is it gives you access to the track at, I guess, most any time the track is available. And it's not, there's no racing. So it's not like there's sanctioned races that go on up there. It's just to, if you have a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or a McLaren or a Porsche or a BMW i8, and you want to see how fast it can go, it has the ability to drive as fast as possible, as fast as you're capable of. And it sounds like a pretty good time. I was up there with the International Motor Press Association, and what was nice about it was I didn't have to pay $150,000 to drive on the track. And there was a variety of cars, everything from the newest Acura to some Camaros. I didn't get to drive the Z28 Camaro. There was too long a line. And I didn't get to drive the Corvette because there was too long a line. But I did drive a variety of cars, including the Dodge Challenger Hellcat, which was a ridiculously crazy car. I have driven some fast cars before. This thing was ridiculously crazy. 707 horsepower. Fast as could be. Not a track car by any means. It's a New England dragway car. It's not a Monticello raceway car. The track has multiple turns, and they also designed it in such a way that the people who were driving up there who were not professional drivers had to slow down. They put some curves in the way just so you couldn't get up out of control speed-wise. And this event used to be called, it used to be at Lime Rock years ago, and it was called Flaunt Your Incompetence Day. Because most people are incompetent when it comes to driving in those kind of conditions. And it was nobody did anything stupid, which was nice to see. The track was designed in such a way. But you can certainly, I was talking to Jim McPherson, who is also the car doctor, who does a program on WTIC in Connecticut and works for the AAA part-time in Connecticut. And he described the track as intimidating. because there are turns on that track that just dive out where you can't even see them. So you have to be very familiar with the track to know where it is. But I also drove pretty normal cars on the track, too. And they also had, part of the event was on Wednesday, you could drive around and check out everything and see drive the cars on the local streets as well. You know, 35, 40, there were some roads that maybe were 50 miles an hour. But you could just, what's nice about this event is you could easily take a variety of cars and do back-to-back comparisons with them. So you could drive the Subaru WRX right next to the Mitsubishi Evo and see how they compared. So that was kind of nice to see. So it was all pretty good stuff. So it was pretty fascinating event. It was a lot of fun. I think we have exhausted Kelly. So no more tickets to give away. If you would like to call in with a question about your car, though, you can do that at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Why don't we take another break? And when we come back, maybe we'll talk to you about your car problems, or you can yell at me about something else if you like. The number is 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
On the other side of the street I knew stood a girl that looked like you. I guess that's deja vu, but I thought this can't be true.
What is the real focus of your life? Is your life self-focused? Is your life about prosperity, peace of mind, freedom from pain, pleasure? Is your life self-focused, or is it God-focused?
Calling all pastors. It's time again for the Pastor's Appreciation Luncheon. This year's keynote speaker is Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Listen to me, Christian. We don't have to be discouraged, because the darker this world becomes, the brighter the light of Jesus Christ can shine.
The Pastor's Appreciation Luncheon, Friday, October 10th from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Lantana in Randolph, Massachusetts. To reserve your seat, go to WEZERadio.com or WROLradio.com. Click on the upper right-hand corner, then you'll be redirected to our registration page. It's that simple.
People are being encouraged to share the gospel with boldness. The gospel is progressing, and that's my life purpose, and I can rejoice in it.
Once again, the Pastor's Appreciation Luncheon, Friday, October 10th from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Lantana in Randolph, Massachusetts. Come, let us show you how much you are appreciated. Be blessed.
For all you contractors and builders, I know you're out there, and I know how challenging building and remodeling can be in New England. Hi, I'm Brian Consolazio, General Manager at Marvin Design Gallery by NSWS, the North Shore's largest Marvin and Integrity window and door dealer. Whether your project includes replacing custom windows or building a new home, Marvin Design Gallery by NSWS can help you with all your project needs. Our professional staff is here to assist you. From historical details to modern concepts, Marvin Design Gallery by NSWS is the place to come. Our knowledgeable team has over 60 years of combined experience with Marvin Windows and Doors and will provide the best possible window and door solution for every project, every time. So come visit me at our brand new showroom at 239 South Main Street, Middleton, Mass. See for yourself how beautiful Marvin Windows and Doors can look in your next project. Visit us on the web at nswsformarvin.com. That's nswsformarvin.com.
Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs. Every day I'd watch them beauties.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. If you would like to talk to us, 617-770-3030. Let's go to Donna. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. All this controversy about this one company apparently in Japan that makes all the airbags in the world.
The Takata Company, I think? Yeah.
Could be them.
Yeah.
I'm 5'4", and I wear glasses, and I always wear my seatbelt. And I look at my old Volkswagen center thing on my steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
If that thing ever goes, I'm toast. Because I can't sit 10 inches away from
Yeah, 10 feet
thing.
Would be really far away.
That would solve the problem.
Yeah.
But I've asked my dealership, and they go, they can't do anything. Is there a legal way to
Sure, there is. Sure, there is. Yep. Yeah, you can apply for a waiver through You actually have to do it through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And you can say, I want to apply for a waiver to have a switch put on my airbag to shut it off when someone who's a little shorter is sitting in behind the steering wheel. And it's pretty much that simple, and probably $150 or something like that, and you can get it installed. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't want to do it because they're afraid of liability. Because they're afraid that if I get in your car and don't turn the airbag back on and I drive into a tree, I can say, well, you know, it's because the airbag was shut off. I got badly hurt. That being said, the airbag, although if you sit, do you sit like right on top of the airbag? Are you like 3 inches away?
Well, not so bad. You know, yeah. I come in with the ruler and say, well, you know, it looks like it's 9.5 inches. But because I'm short, it just looks safe.
It looks scary.
Because the plastic, I've even asked the dealership, how does it explode? You know, does the plastic come off? Does it go sideways? And they don't tell you. You know, it's almost like maybe they've never seen it happen.
Yeah, yeah. What happens is the steering wheel will... It actually has a seam in the middle of it, and it actually acts like a little door.
See, my Volkswagen doesn't seem to have a seam.
Yeah, but it's there.
It's got to be there.
Trust me, it's
okay.
there. And what happens is then that pops open, and the airbag comes out, and it's going to come out probably 8 inches or so.
Uh-huh.
Now, originally, we used to tell people sit 8 to 10 inches from an airbag.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was 10 to 12 inches from an airbag. And then I think you're right. Sit 10 feet from the airbag. That's what you need to do.
That's what I'm suspicious of.
So I think some of it had to do with the lawyers as much as anybody else saying, 8 inches probably isn't enough. We got to say 10.
Mm.
You can do two things, actually. You could actually have someone put an airbag switch in, or you could actually get fairly inexpensively pedal extensions. That will, little blocks that you put on the gas, and probably just on the gas pedal, which will get you another couple inches further away. So it's a little 2-inch thick block. You put it on the gas pedal. Now all of a sudden you're 2 inches further back in the seat because you can move the seat back a little bit further. And then all of a sudden you're a comfortable 10 inches away from the steering wheel.
And I wonder what that's going to do to my mechanic when he gets in the front seat.
Well, it's
a trade-off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure who's doing airbag shutoffs now. I know a guy that we've had on this program before, Junior's Automotive. He has a shop in Hyde Park in Middleborough, and he's been doing them for years. And, been doing them for everything from, people with plow trucks that, are plowing in very uneven areas where, if you're driving a truck with a big plow in the front of it, you run into a boulder in somebody's driveway. You don't want the airbag to go off either. So, and putting them in, all kinds of different vehicles. So, somebody like that could do it. But there are these kits you can buy, and they're not terribly difficult to install. And what happens is when you get in the car and you turn the switch or the key to shut the airbag off, it actually turns the airbag light on as a reminder that that airbag is not going to work. So they're pretty straightforward, but like I said, you could also look into adding a pedal extension, and you can buy those on the internet everywhere. There's a company called Easy Rider Pedal Extension, and you could add that couple inches and make it a little bit easier. So,
all right,
okay.
Well, thank you very much for
all
your
right.
options.
Thank you, Donna. Bye bye. Over to line somewhere to John. One, I think. Hey, John.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Last Saturday's Globe, there was somebody asked you about a 2013 Focus, but a gas cap.
Yep. Or not having a gas cap.
Yeah, and you answered that you need a funnel and that's filled with a gas can.
Well, here's what it was. They thought there was a problem, but I don't remember it exactly. But when you buy a new Ford Focus, it doesn't have a gas cap. It has, they call it capless fuel fill. And if you ever ran out of gas, in with the spare tire, there's a little tiny funnel. And that funnel goes in, and what it does, it opens up that little flap that you would normally see on the, under the gas cap. And you can't open up that flap without that little special funnel.
Well, how do you put it in when you go to the gas station?
Because the nozzle actually releases that little flap. Yeah, so it's actually pretty convenient. You go in there, you open up the gas door, you just stick the nozzle in, fill it up, and you're good to go.
I mean, do you have to go to college to get a degree to learn how to put gas in your gas car now?
Not that I know of. No, it's actually it's funny. We have a bunch of driving school cars at work, and some of the driving instructors went to go out and get gas in the cars because they need to go fill up before they go out and do a lesson, and they call back, they're like, the gas cap's missing. They're like, no, it's not missing. Just, you know, open up the little door and stick the gas nozzle in there, and you're good to go.
Good to go.
Good to go. Nice and easy. But yeah. What happens is, if you ever did run out of gas, that's where the problem is, because you'd run out of gas and it'd be, you'd be in trouble.
Okay.
Okay.
You know where I'm off to right, well, at 10 o'clock?
Where?
Up to Ira Toyota on 114. I live 5 minutes away from
yep.
there. And I remember, I told you that I have, it cost me $1.50 to read your column.
Yeah.
Well, I go up to Ira, they have, in the waiting room, they have half a dozen Hellers, half a dozen Golds. So I sit down, read your column, they give you a free cup of coffee, and I'm back home by 10:30.
I'm gonna have to do a live broadcast from there. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. So from 9 o'clock to 10, I listen to you. 10 to 10:30, read your column. So from around half a minute, John Paul's car heaven.
Well, there you go. Well, hey, John, I really appreciate that. Yeah, you know, we'll have to. Someday I'm gonna have to read my own column. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
All right. Take care, John.
Bye bye.
That was nice. He listens to my program from 9 to 10. Then he goes up to Ira up in wherever they are. Ira Toyota. Ira something or other. One of those Ira groups. And he says they have half a dozen Heralds, half a dozen Globes in the waiting room. He goes up there. He has a cup of coffee. Reads my column. And he says for an hour and a half, he's in John Paul heaven. Well, that was nice. Let's talk to Bobby. Hi, Bobby.
Hello. You mentioned about irritating high beams in the daytime.
Yes.
I saw in one of the latest automobile magazines, I forget whether it was Motor Trend or Automobile or something, there was a little squib about some manufacturer who is putting out extra bright light bulbs is paying a penalty. I don't know whether it was false advertising or what. It said in this little squib that that the bulbs were not lasting as long. I think you made a comment about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was actually Sylvania with the Silver Star bulbs. And there's a class action suit pending that says that Silver Star bulbs are not, they weren't living up to their advertising and they were not lasting long enough.
Right. In fact, there was a movie called Blade Runner in which they made the comment, the light that that burns twice as bright lasts half as long. This was a comment made in the movie.
Yep. Well, they're right.
So another thing, too, is one time I bought some extra bright bulbs for my Mustang some years ago, and they offered a wiring harness to go with it, but I figured, you don't need that. So when I put them in, it turned out that the extra current that they took from the battery to burn these extra brights overheated the local connections to the bulb. And I had to do some resoldering and so forth and so on. They were actually burning out the harness.
Yeah.
It's best to leave things according to the guy.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big believer in some of that. Although I have Sylvania Silver Star bulbs in my own car, and yeah, I find that I only get about 2 years out of them. But when they're I haven't tested them with a light meter or anything, but to me, I find they are brighter and they're whiter, but they also don't offend oncoming drivers. So I actually think they work pretty well. I've also used the GE ones. GE makes something called a Nighthawk. But you're absolutely right. Your quote from Blade Runner, lights that burn twice as bright last half as long. And the typical life of a regular headlight bulb is about 5 years. These are only probably closer to two. I don't know. As my eyes are getting older, I like more light on the road, though.
Right. Well, it was, as you say, I'm 81, so, yeah, that's why I looked to try to use
it. Yeah, well, you sound good for 81, John. That's all I can tell you. Bobby, I mean, you sound good for 81. I hope I sound as good. I hope I sound as good at 81.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Bobby. Sorry, I had the wrong note in front of me. And Paul Sullivan confused me. I don't know. He's here in the studio. He decided to make it in today.
I know. Nice schedule I have, huh?
Yeah. What are you working off Saturdays now at the other job?
At least when I'm 81, I'll remember someone's name.
I know. I know. And the worst part is, it's written down in front of me. Right. You know.
Just the wrong note.
Yeah, yeah.
See how I deflected that issue?
Very well.
You did, yeah.
I thought
you
were going to introduce me by saying, speaking of bright bulbs... But you didn't.
I didn't. It's only my first cup of coffee. I would be, you know, if I was coming in at this hour, I would be a lot quicker.
I know.
You know, it's that whole coming in that hour earlier. It's,
yeah. And my wife's in the house when it's dark and all that stuff.
My wife's in the studio. She's shaking her head going, no, he wouldn't be any quicker.
Violins are over here.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
So what's up?
You went to New York, huh?
I did. Well, I went to the Catskills.
Oh, that's better than New York.
There's nothing up in the Catskills.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
Other than apparently, well, there is the old Monticello Raceway, which is some kind of horse track racino.
Right.
But apparently they're going to fix the economy up there by putting more casinos in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be so many more. You know what's happening to Atlantic City, right?
Yeah. They're like closing three casinos, right?
Right. Yeah. Because, I don't know.
Yeah. People are out of money to spend?
Maybe.
Too much competition.
Or maybe there are too many casinos. I think there's a limited number of casinos that will be effective and will make money, and then anything over that.
It's like shopping malls. You can only build so many of them, and then all of a sudden,
I don't know if we've reached that level yet.
I don't know. You go down the road here to Kingston to the shopping mall down in Kingston. You could bowl in the middle of that. So.
Well, yeah. 1 year on the family trip, we went to the Mall of America out in Minnesota.
Oh, that gigantic one?
Yeah.
With the amusement park in the middle of it?
That is something, yeah.
Yeah. Did you buy anything?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that would be one of those places I'd go, walk around for the entire day and never buy anything. Just be fascinated by the weirdness of it all.
Not to make anybody, you know, it's a tedious story, so I won't tell the whole thing, but... On our family trip,
we only have a minute.
I know. Yep. We allow the family members to pick year by year, and that time was our 8-year-old niece who got to pick. So, want to go to the Mall of America? So we all looked at each other and said, no, and then said, well, we can go to Minneapolis.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice town.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was great. Great trip.
Yep. So
how many more seconds do I have?
It's waning quickly. Yeah. So what's up for the Irish Hit Parade today there, Miss Sullivan?
Great Irish music all day long. And, we have a road race to talk about coming up in a month or so, a couple of remotes to talk about, so there's some good
stuff. Wow,
and you're
going
to do a remote too, huh?
Oh, well, I only
because... casinos?
Yeah, I had a casino, yeah. Only, well, you know, my employer says, hey, you want to come and do your radio show from our travel show? And my answer could be no, but then I'd probably get fired.
Yeah, but so. I can't believe that you work in Pawtucket and never been to Twin River.
I've never been.
Right over there.
Yeah, I know.
Walk it almost.
I know. I just haven't been there. Yeah. Hey, we got to get going. I want to thank John
Good
Brackett.
To see Kelly, by the way. Hi, Kelly.
Kelly's doing a phenomenal job.
Where's Marita?
I don't know. Oh, I don't know. I forget. She's not getting married. I know
okay,
that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So, but I want to thank Kelly for doing a great job.
Kelly
today.
Is great.
She does a good job. She's all nervous when she comes in, but she does a phenomenal job.
Hey, on the podcast, do we have this little back and forth?
We do.
We do. Check some out.
Yeah.
All right,
it's
bye.
Always there. Okay, we got to go. Till next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.